And welcome to Sports City with Jay Smith. It's on every Tuesday, 5 to 6, and you're listening to radio.dominican.edu. First, I'd like to start with some tags. You can check out the Facebook page. It would be under Sports City with Jay Smith on Facebook. Keep liking that page. Keep following. It has information. Also, even more information on sportscityu.blogspot.com. You can find my blog. It already has news about Giants, pitchers and catchers reporting. Now everybody's reporting. And it has news on Kings. It has news on everything. And you can call in anytime you want during the show at 415-482-3587. That's 415-482-3587. And let's get into it. Let's first start with Kings Corner. Now, the Kings had a game the other day against the Cavaliers, who are surprisingly not an absolute terrible team. Kyrie Irving is turning out to be quite the star. Anderson Varejão is still underrated. He could go between underrated or overrated for being too underrated, but really, he's a really good player. And they have an okay team. They have some draft picks as well. The Kings beat them. They had him beat. DeMarcus Cousins had a beautiful reverse layup. It's just amazing that a big man can do that. And it was so good with 2.9 seconds left. Now, apparently, 2.9 seconds is enough time for Tyreek to show why he is not necessarily a bust, but one of the most frustrating players in the NBA. With 0.4 seconds left, Tyreek plays defense by standing still and letting Kyrie Irving drive right by him. But not only does he do that, he also fouls Irving, and the Kings are in the penalty, which means that's two free throws, and the Kings are up by one. Now, two free throws for a good free throw shooter, he sinks them both with 0.4 seconds left, and the Cavaliers win. I think that 2.5 seconds between Cousins' great shot and Tyreek's just idiotic play kind of demonstrates the direction that the Kings are going to go. Cousins is talented. I still am huge on the Cousins bandwagon, even after the Westfall stuff. I kind of blame Westfall more now, and I really think the Cousins can be a superstar. Tyreek, always have been a hater of Tyreek. He makes bad decisions, including game-changing decisions. It's really awful to watch someone stand for 12, 15, 20 seconds of the shot clock and do nothing. He just stands there dribbling, thinking, you know, when I wonder what I should do now. Should I pass? No, passing's bad. I think I'll just take a 20-foot fadeaway. And it's always a fadeaway. It's never just a jump shot. It's always a fadeaway. Man, I'm getting frustrated here with Tyreek, but also, it makes it worse that Isaiah Thomas in the Cavs game had 23 points and 11 assists. The last pick in the draft, Isaiah Thomas, our beloved Isaiah Thomas, completely outshines Tyreek in this game. He plays better than Kyrie Irving throughout the entire game, and he outshines the Kings' so-called star player. Now, how can the 60th pick in the draft, he's 5'9", outshine 6'6" Tyreek Evans and a bulldozer of a man? It doesn't make sense that Tyreek can't get his driving game going every single time, which would open up wide open 18 footers, not even wide open 3-pointers. If he got his driving game going, it would be wide open 18 footers, but he can't do it while Isaiah Thomas can, and it's very frustrating as a Kings fan to watch this team toil with Tyreek Evans at the lead. Now, we have a little redemption tonight. The Kings are playing the Miami Heat. It's very in Kings games, this is very exciting. We love playing the star teams. Our last star team, Oklahoma City Thunder, we ended up beating by 5 at home in a great scene, and we're really hoping that we can do that tonight. Now, matchups-wise, I think DeMarcus Cousins should have a good game. Chris Bosh is still skinny. He never quite grew into himself. While Chris Bosh is an all-star, perennial all-star, he's not much more. He's only an okay defender, and DeMarcus Cousins needs to bully him all over the place. However, there's a guy named LeBron James, and there are no small forwards on the Kings that are even close to being decent. LeBron James is probably going to score 45 points and have 15 rebounds tonight, but that's just an understatement. He's actually having one of the best seasons this year, even with the help of Wade, while he's been injured, with the help of Wade and Bosch and a better supporting cast than he had with the Cavs, he's having an even better season, 28 points, 8 rebounds, and 7 assists in only 36 minutes a game. It's incredible what he can do in such a short amount of time. He's completely in his prime. He's not getting any better, but he's definitely not getting any worse. He's at the very peak of his game, at least as a physical standpoint. And he's actually having almost a better season than Michael Jordan's 1989 season, which I believe was 30 points, 8 rebounds, and around 6 assists. Now, that's Michael Jordan. That's a crazy season. But LeBron is doing all this in also 36 minutes. Now, we're going to take a break here, and we have a guest on the show after the break. But first, we'll take that break. It's there. And welcome back to Sports City with Jay Smith. I'm here, and I have a guest with me, actually. We have Brian Sanchez of the Sports Report.
Jordan, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Fantastic. You know, I love listening to your show. It's only the second one now.
Only second.
But you know what? I couldn't tell. You're doing a great job. I listened last week. I was in my car on the way back to campus. Pulled you up on the phone. It was great. I love what you're saying about Isaiah Thomas. I understand you like him a little
bit. I do. I think all of Sacramento.
Bobby Jackson?
Yeah, he does resemble Bobby. And, you know, we just love Bobby in Sacramento. We want another Bobby.
You know, I like that, though. That's a good comparison. Isaiah Thomas should be really proud to be compared to Bobby Jackson.
Yeah, and he really should be. Isaiah Thomas really is the man. Now, we have a segment here called Around the NBA. I love talking about the Kings, but there are 29 other teams in the league, and I do love basketball, so I love talking about them.
Very fair of you.
First off, we have Greg Oden.
Oh, man.
Now, Greg Oden got some sad news today. He was supposed to go in just to get a little bit of just micro, small little remains from his last surgery out of his knee. It turned out that he needed microfracture surgery, and this is his second one on his left knee, and he will be out for the rest of the season.
And he had one on his other knee, right?
Yes, he did.
This is his third microfracture?
This is his third microfracture.
It's really tragic what's happening to Oden. He came out with such high regard.
Yep.
He was, I mean, in college he dominated only like Shaq had before him, and he was just going to be huge in the NBA. And it's not through his play at all that has made him a bust, which is really the painful part. Usually you accept a bust to Kwame Brown.
Yeah.
You're just terrible for 8 years.
You're just not good at basketball.
But just not being able to get on the court, that's awful.
It really is a shame. And I remember back in the 2007 draft, I remember that ESPN Magazine had two separate covers that they put on all of their covers. They had Kevin Durant in white on one, and then Greg Oden in white on the other. And they had a huge breakdown of who would be it and who would be the superstar or who the better player. And they really couldn't decide. It was fairly even. And I think it was fairly even of who was the main number one pick back then, too. And I think that, I don't know, just Kevin Durant's talent really should have won out when he was at Texas. He did. Everybody saw his talent at Texas. But I think that he's too talented to pass up.
You know, that's tough, though, because size is at such a premium in the NBA. We go back to Kwame Brown. He averages 8 and 8. That's perfectly fine for a backup center, but that makes him worth $7 million. When you have a young 7-foot giant coming out of college and you have an opportunity to get him on your team, I really cannot blame Portland for taking him, just like I wouldn't have blamed them if they took Durant. Durant was so talented. Now you're bringing back memories of that 07 draft. The stupidest thing I've ever heard was Kevin Durant should not be the first pick because at the combine he wasn't able to do a rep on the bench press. I said, can he lift a basketball? Because that's all he's really going to need to do.
That's really all you need.
I mean, why? What does it matter? It's not football. Football, it matters what you bench press. You're going to be hitting someone and knocking them to the ground.
Yeah, Kevin Durant can run past people. He can go over people. You don't need to lift. You can just go around people, and he scores, and he does it at a great rate.
I mean, he's a 6'10
monster
shooting guard. I mean, I've seen him. Have you seen him live?
I have not.
It's unbelievable. He is as agile as a point guard, but he looks like a 7-footer. It's unbelievable what this guy can do.
I can really only imagine. And back to Greg Oden, I think that what you said about size, that's what Portland saw. However, I can't get past the fact that Portland has done this before.
Ah.
They've done it before. You have to learn from history. In 1984, they took Sam Bowie over Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan, the greatest basketball player ever, and they took a no-name center that's only associated with knee injuries. And they did it again.
Yeah, you know what? It's one of those things that can't really be explained. I mean, I've already said my point. I think it's almost impossible to pass up size in the draft. But if you are the number one pick, you usually need a lot of things. You need a scorer. You need a wing player. You need a point guard. You need a big man. So if that second player is so talented, and in the case of Bowie and Odin, the second player was Durant and Jordan, I think you can definitely make a case that the Trailblazers have messed up pretty severely.
Yeah, and I almost guarantee that we will probably see this again, because teams don't learn from their mistakes. They continue to hire bad coaches. They continue to sign bad players. They haven't learned from the mistakes. The lockout doesn't change anything, and they will continue to overlook the past and see a big man with serious knee problems, especially knee problems, but serious injury problems over an incredibly talented any other position other than center. And I just don't think it will ever pass.
You know what's going to happen the next time the Blazers get the number one pick? There's going to be a 7-foot giant and a 6'7" wing player that scores with ease, and they're going to take the wing player, and the big guy will turn into the next Dwight Howard, and the other guy's going to fade off into the distance, and everyone's going to be like, oh my God, why didn't you pick the big guy? I can see it coming. It's just going to be awful.
You know, with the Blazers' luck, that just might happen. Now, on to other NBA news. We have a little bit of Blake Griffin news. Now, Blake Griffin is just about the most exciting player of any sport ever, and that's just my opinion. He can jump higher than anybody else. He's just so exciting. And the best part is, he's good.
Yeah.
He's not just an exciting bad player. He's not someone... He's good. He's just so good. And now he's getting even better. And he's only played in the league for 1.5 years. And he's just so good.
You know, he really is. He took on my Warriors last night, and he actually had a pretty bad game.
Interesting.
It was a little embarrassing how he got used by David Lee, because that really just shouldn't happen. He only got 8 rebounds, but like you're saying, when he goes up for an alley-oop or he goes up to throw down on somebody, you just jump up and you get excited because you see it coming, and it's so fun to watch that man soar through the air. It's unbelievable.
You know, I luckily got to see Blake Griffin last year in person.
That's
and
awesome.
You know, he actually didn't even have the best dunk in the game. DeAndre Jordan had quite the putback jam that was just mind-blowing.
No, if you tell Jordan that Blake Griffin's the best dunker on the team, he's going to get mad at you, and he's going to tell you that he is, and he probably has a decent point. The man can throw down.
He has a nice record, but Blake Griffin also had a slam that just makes you look and just wonder how can humans do that? It just doesn't make sense.
It makes it look so easy, like I'm just going to jump. Like, why don't you jump this high? I'm just jumping.
He's just jumping. Just jumping up in the air. But I also want to say that Blake Griffin, I said he's good, but there are stats to prove it. It's not just, oh, he's exciting, so he's good. He, when he's in the game, he has the best plus-minus in the entire league. And that means that when he's on the court, the Clippers score more than their opponent, more than any other player in the entire NBA.
That's a nice stat. I need to know, first and foremost, Jordan, are you a believer in plus minus, or do you think it's a garbage stat?
I'm a huge believer in plus minus.
You think it really shows something?
I think it actually does show something. And I think especially it has proof, because you have star players at the top of the list most of the time, and then you have the spark plug bench players that do get their due. They don't, a lot of times their energy doesn't translate into stats, but in that it really does.
Now, see, I got to absolutely agree with you here. I love the plus minus because it is the only stat that shows your actual impact on the
exactly.
game. You can have as many points as you want. If you shoot a low percentage, you didn't help. You can have all the rebounds you want. If your team got out rebounded, it doesn't matter. Plus minus shows the effect you have on a game. If you're a bench player and you come in with a +8, it means when you came in, you helped your team.
Your team did work.
They did better. And when there's 5 players on the court at a time, you can really get credit for a good plus minus.
Exactly.
Because there are only so many factors be there.
There's really almost, there's only one ball to go around.
Yeah, and it's just like on the Warriors now, Epe Udo. He started playing center, but before that, coming off the bench, he would have a game where he would have 2 points, 3 rebounds, and 2 blocks, but a +14.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
He would box someone out, and someone else would get the rebound because of it.
Exactly.
Or he would change a shot, but wouldn't get a block. So plus minus gives you credit for those little things without having to score a point to get recognition.
You know, I really am glad that you agree with me, because I think plus minus in basketball, plus minus in baseball, even they can see your wins above replacement, all that stuff. It really is the truth, and it's how you impact the game.
Absolutely.
Now, Blake Griffin, I think that there's a reason that he's so good and that his dunks aren't just for show. I think that his high dunk percentage, he takes more dunks than anybody in the league except probably Dwight Howard and DeAndre Jordan. Those three really are the only three at the top at that elite dunk level. And him attempting so many dunks, basically dunking is usually around a 95-98% shot. That's good field goal percentage. He attempts very dunks are smart shots. He can get to, if he gets to the rim, he's almost guaranteed 2 points with that dunk, maybe even three with a three-point play.
You know, I might even say 95% success on a dunk is lowballing it.
Yeah.
You don't see him miss very much, and when they are missed, it's because it was a foul, and that doesn't go against the field goal percentage.
Exactly.
So you're probably up at the 98-99%. If you go up to dunk, you're probably going to make it. And actually, that's how the Warriors stopped him last night. They packed the paint, said, if you want to take a 12-foot jumper, go ahead.
Yep.
He did. He missed. And he couldn't get offense going.
Yep.
So he is great. And he impacts this game so much. And his rebounding is phenomenal because he uses his vertical on rebounds as much as he does on dunks.
Yes, he does.
But he is going to have to expand his game if he's going to want to be one of the elite players.
Exactly. And he does have weaknesses. He has to improve his jump shot. For bigs in the league now have to have a jump shot. They can't just sit in the paint George Mikan style and
nice
never move.
Pull. That's a nice name drop right there. I like it.
I appreciate it. And he has weaknesses. But, you know, I think he wouldn't have to shoot his jump shot if he could shoot free throws better as well. His free throw percentage is down to almost Dwight Howard, Shaquille O'Neal levels.
It's DeAndre Jordan levels.
Exactly. It's getting really, really bad. And I just want to say that it's almost this has been a pattern from Wilt Chamberlain, from any star big man in the league, that they just can't shoot free throws. I think it's inexcusable, really. Why can six people shoot free throws, but once you get to 6'10", you're just incapable of shooting free throws? It's muscle memory. Just work on it as a kid, and it's almost inexcusable.
No, you hit the nail on the head here. Because I just think about when I was in high school, I shot 65% from the free throw line, and it's the same distance. So what's the excuse for a professional athlete that gets paid millions of dollars to do that?
Millions of dollars.
To shoot worse than me. The little 5'9", I'd like to say 5'10", just for the record.
Probably 5'9".
We'll go 5'11". And I can shoot better than them, and I haven't played basketball in years. I could probably still go out and make about 50% of free throws if we were on a court right now.
Yeah, and they're paid to do it, and they still miss. It's 45%. It's 50%. I'll always go back to it, but it's the reason the Kings didn't win the championship in 2002. They went 15 for 31 in Game 7 of those conference finals, but that is for another day. Now, we're going to have a break here, but when we come back, we'll have the vent, and you are listening to Sports City with Jay Smith on radio.dominican.edu. And welcome back to Sports City with Jay Smith here on radio.dominican.edu, and we have the vent. But first, I would like to encourage you to come out and support DU basketball this Thursday night because it is the Play for K night at Conlon Center. Play for K is an opportunity for a nation of coaches to raise breast cancer awareness and funds for research on the court across campuses, in communities, and beyond. PSAAC will be selling pink t-shirts to raise money for the K Yao Cancer Fund. Shirts will be on sale at lunch this week in front of Calarega for $8 or at the door Thursday night for $10. All the money raised will be sent to the K Yao Cancer Fund. If you wear your pink Play for K shirt to the game, admission is free. Women's game tips at 5:30 and the men's tip at 7:30. Hope to see you there, and as always, go DU! Now, back to the vent. And I know we've been talking about basketball a lot today, but it's basketball season. It's almost the All-Star game, and it's in full swing, and it's getting exciting. And I am still paying attention to the Kings after all these years, after so much pain. But you know what? After all these years and all these years of experience, I said to myself earlier, you know, I really like Jeff Petrie, but we've been bad for a noticeably long amount of time. You see other teams, they're bad for a couple of years, and then all of a sudden they're good. They get back to being good, mostly if they draft well. And I've always said to everybody, no, Petrie that's his strength. The draft is his strength. He drafted Kevin Martin with the 23rd pick. That was such a bargain. He drafted Jason Williams, Peja Stojakovic, all these guys. He's a good drafter. But then I looked at the last few years and I saw some information that was kind of haunting. And I knew about one of them, or actually I knew about a couple of them, but the others, well, they're not good if you're a Kings fan. Now, the first one, this is the 2006 to 2011 drafts, and I will read the Kings picks, and then I will read the pick almost immediately after the Kings. Quincy Doobie in 2006, he maybe played 3 games in the NBA, maybe. He was supposed to be this great shooter from Rutgers, I remember. Oh, man, he's going to be now what Jimmer is supposed to be. He's just a shooter. He's going to shoot and shoot and shoot. He didn't shoot, and he didn't play. And then Rajon Rondo was picked with the 21st pick 2 later. Rajon Rondo, one of the top 5 point guards in the league, is so in control of the game as a pure point guard, which is still something the Kings have lacked since Mike Bibby. That's a long time ago. Now, 2007, Spencer Hawes. I was so optimistic about Spencer Hawes. He could shoot threes as a big man. He was a big body. He just wasn't athletic. But I was like, no, it's okay. He'll be just like Vlade. He was a good passer. He didn't turn out so well. He turned out to be soft. He turned out to be whiny. He got in fights with Westfall. And then, of course, now he's doing extremely well and almost most improved for the Sixers. But that's another Westfall problem. But Spencer Hawes didn't do well with the Kings. 2 picks later, Thaddeus Young, one of the Sixers' best players. And the Sixers are a top 4 team in the East. One of their best players, Thaddeus Young. How do we miss this? The Petrie just can't see the talent. Thaddeus Young has such a long body. And we, just like me and Brian said earlier, those long bodies, they don't need to be strong. They can go over people. They can go around people. Thaddeus Young can go over people. He is such a long defender. Petrie really, really slipped up on that one. And that was a pretty mediocre year for the Kings. And we really needed something a little more than Hawes to get us going. Now, the next year, in 2008, the Kings drafted Jason Thompson out of Rider University in New Jersey. Now, I remember thinking, oh, yeah, Petrie's a great drafter. He'll find these guys out of nowhere. Like, I went back to Kevin Martin out of Western Carolina. Western Carolina, nobody saw him coming. Jason Thompson, I was like, man, nobody's going to see him coming from Little Rider. He did work on Michael Beasley in a game. I remember that. That was just a huge deal. He is barely coming into his game now. He has fumbled. He's just not been playing, up to his status as a power big man. He still doesn't have a position. He's gone between power forward and center his entire career. Still doesn't have a position. 5 picks later, Roy Hibbert of the Pacers was drafted. Roy Hibbert is an all-star this year. He's really, really good. He's 7'3". He's huge. The guy can disrupt any shot. He's just a big monster of a man. And Jason Thompson was supposed to be that monster of a man. He has been whiny. He has been a little bit soft, almost, in his years. Roy Hibbert, nobody calls Roy Hibbert soft. Nobody. And then, the good old 2009 draft. The Kings had the worst record in the league. They really, really needed something. Blake Griffin was coming out of college. It was a time for hope for Kings fans. Unfortunately, the lottery gods didn't call upon us that day, and we got the 4th pick. But then we got Tyreke Evans, and he did so well his rookie year, and he had 25-5 and all that stuff. But then he floundered, and then he made bad decisions, and he keeps making bad decisions, and he makes bad shots, and he can't pass. And then this year, Ricky Rubio comes in, the 5th pick in the 2009 draft. And he is exactly what everybody said he would be, and more. The guy is a rookie. He's not as athletic as anybody else on the court, but he makes these passes just everywhere. And he's averaging 9-10 assists as a rookie, which is incredible. That's superstar status. Nobody does that as a rookie. 9 assists? And he, at first, he had what Kevin Love to pass to. That was about it. Now, this Timberwolves team has a winning record. The Minnesota Timberwolves, they haven't done that since Kevin Garnett. And the doormat of the league is now becoming a winning team. They weren't winning last year with Kevin Love. They were a terrible team with just Kevin Love. You add Ricky Rubio to that, an absolute... They can be good. They can be great, even, with Ricky Rubio and Kevin Love. And I remember the 2009 draft thinking, all I want is Ricky Rubio. All I want is Ricky Rubio. I want Ricky Rubio and nobody else. I just want Rubio. We didn't get Rubio, which was a disappointment, but then he stayed in Spain for 2 years. And I was like, oh, you know, he might not even come to the league. Man, Timberwolves, good old Con, you know, just doing his thing as Con does. But then he came to the league, and then he did work. And the Kings still don't have a point guard since Mike Bibby, and Ricky Rubio is the next Steve Nash. And it really just didn't quite work out for Petrie and his Kings. But he had another shot next year. And this is a little more defensible. DeMarcus Cousins was taken with the 5th pick, but then the guy with the third best PER, which is a stat that is supposed to be all-encompassing of basketball, it's very famous in ESPN, the guy with the third highest PER in the entire league is Greg Monroe, and he was picked with the 7th pick. Now, the Pistons, you'd think, oh, but they're still really bad. He's not better than DeMarcus Cousins. Pistons have, while the Knicks get all the attention, the Pistons have secretly won 7 out of their last 9 games. And Greg Monroe is unquestionably the best player on that team. Now, they've gone 7-2 in their last games. I don't see DeMarcus Cousins doing that with the Kings. We haven't gone 7-2 in a stretch of 9 games since probably around the Chris Webber days. But Cousins has potential, and I will forgive Petrie for that. Last but not least, we have the 2011 draft. And we pick Jimmer. And everybody loved Jimmer, and everybody wanted Jimmer stuff, and Jimmer, Jimmer, Jimmer. And I was Jimmer, Jimmer, Jimmer. And then Jimmer was eh. Jimmer has been mediocre, especially those first 10, 15 games. He would jump up, not know what to do, and make a bad pass. Immediately, turnover. Immediately. And he did that consistently. It didn't stop. On the other hand, Klay Thompson on the local Golden State Warriors, he is the shooter that the Kings need. He's the shooter that Jimmer Fredette was supposed to be. The guy's shooting 45% from threes. He's good. And he can drive, too. Jimmer can drive, but he can't get his shot over. Klay Thompson has been able to get his shot off. He can create his own shot if he needs to, and he especially runs well off the ball. He really gets his own shot off of screens. And Jimmer, I don't know, Jimmer is so marketable, but he's really not paying off. And all of this leads up to me saying that Petrie needs to get out. I have been a Petrie fan since the beginning. I have loved him. I always said, hey, we built a great team back in the day, you know, the glory days. He built such a team, and he did it through draft. He did it through free agency. He did it through trades. He did it through everything. And then the Kings got bad, as good teams do. Good teams get old, and you're seeing it today with a few teams like the Lakers and Celtics. They're getting old, but then they get good again. The Kings haven't gotten good again, and it's been a long time. And Kings fans are still waiting, and we're always saying, oh, just next year, you know, I have faith. I don't have faith in Petrie anymore. His track record is just not adding up. And these last 6 years have been the most important for drafting, because that's when the team was bad. They've had these high picks, and boom, we need to get back. The Thunder were good. They were a 5 seed in Durant's 3rd year already. It's Tyreek's 3rd year. Why aren't we a 3 seed? Why are we the 2nd worst team in the Western Conference? Petrie needs to say goodbye right now. Now, when we come back, we'll have Brian Sanchez come back on the show, but you are listening to Sports City with Jay Smith every Tuesday from 5 to 6 on radio.dominican.edu. And welcome back to radio.dominican.edu. This is Sports City, and I am Jay Smith, and we are here talking about all sports. It's been mostly basketball today, but I think we're going to change that up a little bit. We have some Bay Area baseball news, actually, and not just the Giants. I do love talking about the Giants, but we actually have a little A's news. Now, I will first give my opinion of the A's. I am not an A's hater. As a Giants fan, I will root for the A's. I think they're just as local as San Francisco, basically. I think Giants fans should root for the A's. Now, I wasn't alive back in 89 when the Giants and the A's played in the World Series. I wasn't really alive when they were rivals. So I say, why not love? Don't hate. Just love the A's. What do you think, Brian?
No, I don't hate the A's. As a Giants fan, I don't even recognize the A's as an organization. So they're not even in the MLB, so they don't make a difference to me. That's no just, reason to hate them.
That's just about the best answer I've ever heard. Any of you A's fans out there, I hope you heard that, because lately that's just about been the case. However, this offseason is a little bit different. The A's have been making splash after splash, trade and free agent signings, and they're everywhere. They're just all over the place. First, they got rid of Gio Gonzalez, they got rid of Trevor Cahill, and they got rid of Andrew Bailey. Three of their best pitchers on the staff, on a pretty decent staff. But then they signed Jonas Cespedes for 4 years, $36 million. And then after that, they signed Manny Ramirez. Good old Manny Ramirez, still in the league. Brian, your thoughts on Manny Ramirez?
You know what? This move is perfectly fine with me. He's getting $500,000, which in the MLB is a nickel. So it doesn't make much of a difference there. And he can't play in the first 50 games because he's suspended from his performance-enhancing drugs that forced him into retirement back when he was on the Rays. So you're paying him very little. He's going to give you very little production. But what he will do is bring you national attention. ESPN is going to want to cover Manny Ramirez and all the crazy, stupid things he says. So while they're covering Manny Ramirez, you push your sympathy vote for letting the league move you to San Jose and get your stadium built there. This is just a marketing ploy. They already have an overloaded outfield. Yeah. Where they're not going to have enough innings to play all their players anyway. It's purely marketing, and I think it's a heck of a job.
Now, that's one opinion. I do agree a little bit with that opinion, that it is a marketing ploy. They've signed these players just... They do need money to go down to San Jose. They do need money as a professional organization in the MLB. However, another opinion could be that they are just stockpiling trade assets. They have gotten all these people on one-year contracts. They've gotten Manny Ramirez. They've gotten Bartolo Colon. Coco Crisp was on a two-year contract. Now, these are guys that come, at least Coco Crisp may be an overpay, but these are guys that are coming at the cheap. And if they perform a little better, the A's can trade them for even more prospects, as Billy Bean does. He just trades for prospects and prospects. However, before this offseason, the A's had a bottom 10, bottom 5 farm. Just, it wasn't good. Now, it's probably around 10 to 15. They got quite the haul in the Gio trade. They got a decent haul in the Cahill trade.
I think in the Cahill trade, they might have got their best player, though. They got right-handed pitcher Jared Parker. And you'll be him this season, and it wouldn't surprise me if it's soon this season. This guy's a flamethrower. He's going to be awesome, and I think that trade was okay, but the other trades, they made no sense to me.
Now, yeah, I agree with Jared Parker. I remember seeing his name, and he really is going to throw heat. But I think that, you know, I'm never really understanding what the A's do in the past, but if this works out, if they get prospects and prospects, and then actually just once in his life, Billy Bean lets his prospects grow into players at the same time, they might just have a team. And that team will be in 2015, 2016, maybe when they're in another location.
Totally agree with you, but do you think this is on Billy Bean or is it on Lou Wolf, the owner? Because you, as a GM, have to be given money to work with. And Lou Wolf doesn't have any money because no one goes to the games to spend on the team. So Billy Beane has to do what he can with what he has. And usually that's trading players before it's time for a payday.
You know, I agree with you. And I will admit that I have kind of been victim to a big media outburst that, you know, Billy Beane, he's the, especially after the movie Moneyball, he is the big name. Everybody knows Billy Beane's name. Not everybody knows Lou Wolf's name. They don't. Why are we blaming Lou Wolf? Why should we blame him? Billy Beane, I know him. He's behind this. He must be the bad guy. Lou Wolf is under the radar as the owner, while Billy Beane takes all the heat. But Lou Wolf is really, I agree with you, really is the reason that the A's are down in poverty.
Because when you ask people, what does the general manager do? The most likely give you an answer along the lines of, he makes the trades, he signs the free agents. So anytime you make a trade you don't like or you sign a free agent you don't agree with, it goes squarely on the GM because that's his job.
Yep.
It's also his job to take into account how much money the owner will give him to work with. And when it's none, like he's getting from the A's, it makes your job difficult. So have they been winning? No. But has he been doing pretty well with what he's given? Yeah. Hence, contract extension through pretty much the rest of his life.
Basically.
2019? Wow.
Now, I agree with you there. And I think the reason it worked back in 2000, 2001, 2002, that era, that Moneyball era, was that nobody else knew about it. Just like the movie said, no one else knew about it. And there was, I just watched Moneyball recently, actually, about 3 days ago for the second time. And I saw the trade deadline segment, which was my favorite part of the book. And
great
he
book,
just,
by the way.
Manipulation. He goes even to Brian Sabian, the Giants GM. He goes to the White Sox, to the Nationals, to the Mets. He goes to all these people, and he's just this puppet master. He's making them make trades that they didn't even know existed just so he can be funded to get his guy. Except the only bad thing, the only lurking thing in that scene is that he needed the money in the first place. He needed that money, and he needed that manipulation to get the money in the first place. Now, GMs know that he is manipulating them. They know they have sabermetrics as well, and they have really figured out that, hey, we can do this too. We can do this too.
I mean, it's just like now if Billy Beane comes asking you for your 52nd best prospect, you go, hold on a minute, this guy might be pretty good. Just like when the San Francisco Giants are scouting players, if they like a pitcher and you're a team before them in the draft, you might want to think about the pitcher they like because they're one of the best teams at drafting pitching. People catch on to trends, and that's why they don't usually last very long, which is why that 2019 extension for Billy Beane surprised me.
Yeah, and I agree. Now across the bay to our beloved San Francisco Giants, pitchers and catchers reported, outfielders reported, infielders, everybody. It's an exciting time. It's spring, and it really is exciting. What are your thoughts on a broad view of the Giants this season?
The Giants are a better team right now than they were in 2010 when they won the World Series.
Okay.
Coming into camp.
Yeah,
and I mean, that.
I agree.
I mean, that's not outlandish because it's a completely different team that won the World Series than started. But even last year, where people expected them to make the playoffs again, it's a better team than last year.
This team is better.
Losing Jonathan Sanchez means nothing to me. I was afraid every time he took the mound that I was going to get 2 innings, 7 walks, 4 hits, and that was it.
The biggest risk-reward player I've seen.
Yeah, so I don't mind losing him. But what I do like is you traded him, and you got a guy in Melky Cabrera who is not phenomenal. He's not going to, you know, change the world with his offense, but he's a good hitter. And you can put him in the lineup. Then you trade pretty much nothing for Angel Pagan, who, again, is a leadoff hitter. He's not going to rival Jose Reyes, but he's a good leadoff hitter. He's got good speed.
I really remember Andres Torres fondly, though.
Oh, absolutely. Now, unfortunately, the end of his Giants tenure was not very good,
not
with him
so
being
good.
A completely ineffective player.
Yep.
But we definitely upgraded in Pagan over Torres and Cabrera over Burrell or Huff.
Yeah.
Out in left field is going to be much better. Schierholz is going to get the shot at right. I think this is a better team with a lineup that is just decent all the way through. Posey, obviously the star, as long as he is Buster. Pablo yes. can get on a hot streak and rip anybody to shreds. But 1-8, this is just a decent hitting team. And when you have a phenomenal pitching staff, that might be all you need.
Now, I asked you, I just want to remind you, I asked you of your broad view, and you gave me such a detailed response.
No,
and that's exactly...
No, that was not detailed. Okay, that was as broad as I get, Jordan.
For non-baseball fans, that was very detailed. But for us Giants fans, that's just 100th of what we could do in talking about lovely spring training. And it's hope. It's really hope during spring training. Every team has it. Even the Cubs. Every year, they have hope during spring training. You know, maybe...
Probably not the Pirates, though.
You know, but the Pirates did have that winning record through half the season. They had hope.
I like Clint Hurdle.
Even the Pirates can have hope.
Everybody's undefeated.
And one of the things I'm hoping for, I want to go back to something you said, is Buster Posey. Mm. The main thing on every Giants fan's mind.
I hate Scott Cousins.
May 25th. I'll always remember it. I'll always remember where I was during that game, during... The last five innings of that game, I remember where I was. And it was just so heartbreaking. We won't get into that because we'll both probably start getting too upset. However, he's come back and he's playing and he's hitting. He's hitting the bat. He's hitting in batting cages. He's throwing. He's making a serious throwing motion, actually. And I want to see what you think on how Buster Posey will recover.
I think we're not going to get 100% Buster Posey at all this entire year. We're going to get about 80% Buster Posey, which is 280, 22 home runs, and 80 RBIs. So it's perfectly fine.
The second best hitter on the Giants already.
Yeah, so he's definitely going to be the four hitter. I'm not worried about that. Behind the plate, hopefully he won't lose much off that arm because he was phenomenal at throwing people out.
Yes.
And a leg injury can obviously hurt your ability to come out of the crouch. They're saying he's going to be... perfectly fine. I, of course, don't believe him because why would they say anything else? But I do expect him to be very good and probably the best non-pitcher on the Giants still.
Yeah. I agree with you that it'll be pretty good. I disagree with you in that I think he will be really good.
Wow.
I think that he is fully recovered. I believe in Buster Posey. He's a blue-collar guy. He's from Georgia. He works hard. I think he went... to his physical therapist, he got better every single day, and he was dedicated to being better and getting back to his rookie of the year form. And even in his second year, April, he had an okay month, but in May, especially coming up to his injury, he was hitting. He was really raking it.
If anybody could do it, Buster could. It's one of the most beautiful swings I've ever seen on a right-handed batter.
Exactly.
He tries to do so little and gets so much from it. I cannot wait to see him swing the bat on a routine basis again, because I really did miss that. When you watched that pitiful offense last year from the Giants, you could just imagine Posey swinging and how much better it was.
Exactly, and especially with all of the Giants lefties. They have Huff, they have Belt, they have Sheerholtz, they have...
Melky,
they have all these lefties. We need... And Panda is a switch hitter, but he's better on the left. We need that righty hitter that's in the middle of the lineup. It's not Brett Pill, unfortunately, but it is Buster Posey.
Yeah, you know what? I don't even care which way you hit from. We need a big hitter in the middle of the lineup. Huff didn't do it at all last year, and I think he really has lost his standing in the organization because Bochy has said it will be an open competition for first and time in left between Pill, Belt, and Huff, and he also said they all know what they need to do to get playing time. And even we know what they need to do.
Yes.
You need to hit the ball.
You need to hit.
Whoever is hitting the ball will play. I hope it's Brandon Belt.
Oh, I hope so much that Belt hits. I just want him to play every at bat, every game. I just want him to get that experience. And I think that if they just stick with him, he will be good. Now, unfortunately, this has become the close of the show. And you have listened to Sports City with Jay Smith on radio.dominican.edu. We've had our guest, Brian Sanchez, here.
Well, thanks for having me, Jordan. I'd like to remind everybody that coming up next for 2 hours is my show, The Sports Report. It's me, Brian Sanchez, along with my co-host, Case Donahue. And for the first half an hour of every show, we have your very own Jordan Smith of Sports City. So all of you fans out there of Jordan, be sure to stay tuned on radio.dominican.edu. And you'll hear us continue to just smother you with sports knowledge.
So much sports.
Coming up on the other side of the hour.
It really is a fun show, and it's fun to be on the show. And I'd like to thank Brian for coming on, and this has been Sports City with Jay Smith on radio.dominican.edu.